coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
I'm Chico Bon Bon, monkey with a tool belt.
You know him as the monkey with the tool belt. Now, Chico Bon Bon goes Hollywood, ready for downloading on Netflix.
You got a problem? We can solve it.
Plus, some Wisconsin phone. Businesses have the okay to reopen. But is it as easy as it sounds?
We saw as a challenge, pricing started increasing. Then eventually some products started disappearing. You know, how the big joke was toilet paper on shelves. Well, for my business, we make homemade bakery items. Yeast was the toilet paper.
All that, plus a roundup of the regional news after this.
Issues from a superior point of view.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. He's a mischievous monkey who's made a sensation in the Twin Ports, from Marshall Hardware to the Duluth Children's Museum.
I'm Chico Bon Bon, monkey with a tool belt.
Now the monkey with a tool belt has gone Hollywood, or as Hollywood as you can get these days, with his own Netflix series.
You got a problem? We can solve them.
We'll speak with his creator, Chris Monroe, later in the show. First, though, the Wisconsin State Supreme Court has overturned Governor Tony Evers' safer at home orders, although a patchwork of local lockdown orders are still in effect in cities and towns across the state. But even if you can reopen your business, what exactly does that mean? Our guests are two business owners from Superior, Annette Jacobson of Twisted Pastries. Welcome, Annette.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks, and thanks for being here. And Amanda Korhonen, owner of Pottery Burn Studio.
Hi.
Helping to guide them through is Andrew Donahue, director of the Small Business Development Center.
Good morning.
Again, thank all of you for being here. So to start off, one of the reasons we're together is that Andy's Small Business Development Center has been giving both of you advice before we even heard of the word coronavirus. Annette, tell us how long you've been in business and some of the help that Andy's advice has meant for you.
Yeah, I've been in business for approximately 2 years as of March. And I met Andy probably about a year and a half prior to that on devising a plan that seemed appropriate for our coffee house called Twisted Pastries Coffee House.
Mm-hmm. And Amanda, tell us about Pottery Burn. And start with the name, by the way, because I keep wanting to say Pottery Barn, right?
Correct, yes. No, it is Pottery Burn Studio. I actually have been the owner for about 5 years, but last February we moved to Superior from Duluth. So Andy and his association helped us get some grant money available to help us get new signage and kind of revamp the building that we are in currently. It used to be a dress store, so there was a lot of altering that had to be done in order to make it an art studio.
No pun intended, right? The dresses had to be altered.
Correct.
Right. So when it did take effect, the stay-at-home order, did you close completely or tell us what happened?
When the first order took into effect, we did kind of shut down. We were able to do paint-to-go kits for a couple of weeks before the final order said all non-essentials have to be closed. So we did kind of hold on for a little bit, but then we took the next 30 days completely off and were totally shut down. We were still in there maintaining and running the kilns because we still had some stuff to fire. But we were totally shut down and trying to keep our customers engaged on social media. And I was doing videos from home, how-to videos.
Right. And I know a little bit about kilns. I know you can't you can't just turn it on and turn it off, right? It's a pretty complicated and intense process.
They're a little bit more modernized, all pre-programmed. So once they're loaded, we just check to make sure that they're running. And then we turn them on and hit the fans and make sure the fans are running. And then we let them run for about 24 hours. So then I have to go back into the studio and make sure that nothing, you know, blew up in the kiln and
right.
Make sure everything survived.
And that's what I meant, that they stay on for quite a while. What the public does, though, is you have them paint their creations or?
Yes. Yep. So our shop has 12 plus bookcases full of what we call bisque. It's clay that has already been fired once and now is now ready for paint. So they come in and pick a cereal bowl or a piggy bank, and they paint it however they want in the studio. And then we take it from there and make sure it's got a nice clear glaze over everything, and then fire it, and then we'll call them when it's all done with that process.
Mm-hmm. And the location is?
We are at 1207 Tower Avenue, right next to VIP Pizza and just down the street from Twisted Pastries.
Okay. Well, then, Annette, I don't have to ask where you are, because Amanda just told you where she goes for lunch when she's in business. So how about you? Tell us when it hit, when you got the order, what happened?
Yeah. So when we found out about it, we acted pretty quickly. We saw an influx of folks coming in to kind of get their last minute of coffee shop experience, I guess, knowing that they were going to be stuck at home for a while. So right immediately after that, we scaled back pretty quickly. You know, I saw a couple of days where there was very few sales whatsoever, so I really, you know, didn't like making those kinds of decisions to cut back on staff. We typically have anywhere from like 10 to 11 part-time, close to full-time. A couple of them are close to full-time staff. And I had to let four of them go temporarily till we can get ramped up again at some point. And what ended up happening is the hours also got shifted. We noticed people staying at home, not a lot of traffic happening in Superior. So we decided to close our shop at 1 p.m. in the afternoon every day instead of staying open till after 5:30. Mm-hmm. So we made some drastic changes. We waited for people to come in. So we never closed completely, and we had to make adjustments within our coffee shop to where taking all the self-serve condiments off the counter, we pulled that immediately behind the counter. So we're handling all the half and half and the cinnamon, the honey, stir sticks, all that kind of stuff, even lids for coffee, to-go coffee cups right behind the counter. And then we also started hand sanitizing the door handles, you know, as people were coming in, not only to the building, but into our shop. So nobody was allowed to come in and sit anymore. They could come in and order for takeout and go, or we put up signs on our windows to be able to let our customers know if they drove up that they can just call the number and we can run their food and drink out to them at the car and take payment from them there and do all the running inside the building. We're a food industry, so we have all kinds of health code that we have to follow, which means a lot of hand washing as it is. So that's already in our routine. But another thing that we had to do is, you know, lots of gloves, and then switch to a lot of to-goes. So we immediately removed all of our mugs and plates and all that stuff, even for us to use. We've gone to disposables for ourselves as well. We work off of an iPad even, where customers have to sign sometimes if their debit cards allow it. And we've taken control of the full iPad, and mm-hmm. we just have them tell us what they want us to push on there when it gets to the customer's portion.
Right.
So yeah, there's been some big changes.
Right. But you ended up staying open the whole time?
Yeah. Yep. Actually, we have.
Mm-hmm. But you did have to lay some people off. We're speaking with Annette Jacobson, owner of Twisted Pastries in Superior, and Amanda Korhonen, owner of the Pottery Burn Studio. Also with us is Andrew Donahue of the Small Business Development Center at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. So what's available? I mean, I think everybody knows about PPP loans, but you could tell us exactly what they are and how they would or wouldn't apply to Annette and Amanda's situation.
Certainly. So a couple of programs that have been readily available for the most part are Small Business Administration programs. So you have the Economic Injury Disaster Loan program that became available pretty quickly after Governor Evers sent in the paperwork for a federally declared disaster and was approved by the president. And then shortly after that, we had the Paycheck Protection Program. And that obviously has been one that has been renewed under the CARES Act with additional funding that's come through. So even though both programs are different, they do have some similarities where they can be used for payroll. They can be used for some different operating expenses and such. The big difference between both of those programs, however, is, as most people know, the Paycheck Protection Program was designed to get your individual employees that are working for you back on payroll off of unemployment and be used for situations like this where businesses are able to reopen. And so that 8-week forgivable grant, and most people have received the funding that have applied. There are new guidelines now that are going to show how to, you know, take care of the forgiveness aspect and to start that application process.
Mm-hmm.
Other programs or other things that we're...
Well, let me go back to that one a little bit, though, because Annette mentioned that she did have to lay off some people. So does that make her ineligible for the payroll protection plan, or does that mean she has to pay something back, or how's that work?
Nope. The Paycheck Protection Program is actually based on your history from 2019. So looking around the same, your average payroll for 2019 and figuring out what your average payroll was over a certain period of time, and then also what your headcount is going to be over a certain period of time. So once you receive those funds, you're able to, you know, bring your employees back as long as you're meeting, you know, certain requirements for the headcounts, getting them as close to the certain number of wages that they had before. So everyone's going to be a little bit different in how they operate, depending if they're retail, if they're food and beverage, if they're hospitality and tourism. So everyone will be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Even in the case where, again, Annette, you can jump in here, but you've got fewer hours than you had before. So would you be expected to keep the payroll you had as an average in 2019, and yet you only have a fewer hours for those people? This is uncharted territory.
Right.
Certainly.
So,
and
go ahead, Andy.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, the nice thing about the program, even though it's giving you a set dollar amount, it is giving you a little bit of flexibility of what you can use the funds for. You know, the crux of the program was to get, you know, employees back working. So at least 75% of the funds utilized for the forgiveness aspect have to be used for your payroll. Obviously, when this program started, the Small Business Administration and the Treasury Department worked on this, they understood not everybody is going to be able to utilize it for the same purpose. So they did give a little bit of flexibility where you could use some of it for mortgage interest only payments, to use it for rent or lease payments, then also utilities to run your business.
Okay.
So even though, you know, there might be some situations where individual businesses might not be able to use the entire amount for payroll, there is a little bit of flexibility that you can use it for, as long as it meets that 75% threshold.
So Annie has explained it better than I've heard it before. Annette, would you have been able to get this through without Annie explaining it like that?
Well, Andy was the first go-to when I heard about this program. He pointed me into the right direction. I was able to go online and apply, and I missed that first pass that came through. But they had, my bank had saved documents, of course, and I was actually eligible the second pass that came through. So, Andy does explain it really well.
Okay. Yeah, seriously, there are people who, he's not the only one, who do guide you with this. And frankly, I think that's almost a requirement you really need to have. Amanda, how about the powdery burn? Have you planned on opening, or did you attempt to, or what did Andy say to do?
Yes, we did open. We got approval actually from the city attorney's office to open at the end of April for our to-go kits, as long as we were still complying with curbside services and all of our other inside operations as far as disinfecting goes and keeping things safe. They did not allow me to hire staff back yet, so it is just me that's doing all of that. But now with these new release of orders, I do plan on bringing back shortly. We just have to kind of weigh out all of the actual specifics on how that looks and what does that look like to open back up for painting in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of different things to consider as far as, we normally do a lot of birthday parties and larger groups, and everybody is grabbing their own paint themselves and we've always cleaned the tables after they're done and during, and now we just have to go those extra steps. And do we need to have somebody in charge of the paint so there's only one person touching the paint? You know, we've got a lot of community places, just like a restaurant does, with a, you know, community bathroom and all of that. So it's just those extra steps that we've never really had to think about in great depth for. So.
And two people can't paint the same piece of pottery, right? Because if they have to be 6 feet away, unless they happen to live in the same abode.
Correct. Yep. And we get a lot of families in, a lot of grandparents bringing in their grandchildren for the weekend. So I don't think that the tables specifically are going to be our biggest problem, but we sometimes do have a large group come in, and we do have a party room that's kind of a separated space, but that really only seats about 12 people. So I think with orders the way that they have been, I think if we can kind of limit the number of people that we have in the studio to about half capacity, we'll be okay, and we can kind of maintain those.
Right. But all this is counterintuitive to what you want to do as a business. The purpose of a business is to have people coming in, not to limit the people.
Yes.
Right. So yes. What about the payroll protection plan? Have you applied for that, and does it apply to your situation?
I did, yep. Unfortunately, my payroll is pretty small. I only have about, on average, 3 to 4 part-time staff. So my payroll protection was pretty small, but I was thankful for that. And I am utilizing that to get them back in the studio as soon as possible. Plus using that for those extras that we had to add that we don't normally supply as far as supplies for the to-go kits. I'm nearly out of paintbrushes, and I've already had to reorder them before, but the little portion cups that we never carried before to send paint home and all those other little things is part of what that extra, you know, 25% has been used for, because I needed it in order to maintain the business. So,
And maintaining the business, how long can you continue on a diminished operation like that?
Well, not very long. We were able to take advantage of some other things around the city. The City of Superior had a grant out there, and the Development Association, so we did get on that. But that's really going to only get us through maybe September. And that's, of course, absolutely with no sales. So if we can maintain these to-go orders and then increase people coming in and having those small groups, I think that we'll be able to make it. But we might just have to kind of scale back in the meantime and maybe not have so much inventory available for people to choose from, or that many paint colors to choose from, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Annette, the same question?
It's all new territory for everyone.
Right. Annette, how long can twisted pastries keep twisting in the wind? Oh, that's a terrible way of putting it. But
Well, actually, you know, we've had a little bit of good luck come our way during this pandemic. We've been able to secure 2 wholesale accounts where other businesses want to sell our goods. So we started learning how to package up our delicious bakery items, you know, scones, cupcakes, muffins, cookies, all that kind of stuff, into individual packaging, labeling with ingredients on it, and selling it at the Superior Meat Market. And then one that just opened in Solon Springs called The Bake Shop, where they're pulling us in as one of their several bakeries. And, you know, so that's really kind of helped offset a little bit of the customers not coming in and enjoying our atmosphere during this time. Usually our baking staff is the smallest portion of the staff on my payroll. And front counter is, you know, working with customers is the largest part. And now it's all of a sudden kind of evening out to where I sometimes have 2 bakers on a day for about 5 to 6 hours. So it's really been kind of a interesting event, you know, that have happened here in the last month. And trying to figure out where else can we put twisted pastry products in other places, in other small towns that are nearby.
Mm-hmm. Andy, isn't that part of what you advise companies to do on a non-pandemic day, which is to constantly look at where their profit areas are, the cost-benefit squares, and constantly reposition themselves and say, hey, maybe I shouldn't be doing this part of business, maybe doing something else?
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, when we're working with our clients, we're always advising them, you know, whether it's, you know, a pandemic like we're in right now, or if it's just, you know, a regular seasonality aspect, where are your cash buckets? Where are your revenue tables going to be? But then also look at the market itself and find ways in which you can not only get your product to your consumers, but also ways where you need to pivot as needed. So if you have issues, or if you have a way as of this pandemic where you can't reach your client base, how are you going to be able to change your business model slightly where you can still reach your clients? And both of these businesses have really reached, you know, that aspect where they're able to reach their product out to their customers in different, you know, varieties, whether it's a curbside, you know, pickup aspect, whether it's marketing to them on social media. They're able to, you know, reach their client base and offer a variety of different scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Amanda, how hard is it to hold back? You mentioned you're pretty much the only one working there now, and I'm sure your natural instincts are to, okay, let's bring on the part-time staff and let's fire up the kiln and let's do all this great stuff. But you know, you can't. So is that a sort of a psychological thing you have to gird yourself to say, all right, step back?
Oh, for sure. I've definitely had good days and bad days mentally.
Well, we don't need to get into analysis, but...
we used to be just kind of one staff on at a time. And now with the change of things, we are probably going to be limiting hours and keeping those limited hours so that we can all be there at the same time. I think that will allow us to be a little bit more efficient in what we were doing and what we will be doing with all of the new changes coming.
Mm-hmm. And social distance while you are there, too.
Right. Yeah, but our studio is about 3,000 square feet, so we've got distance.
Well, that should be easy enough.
Yes, yes. Annette, I'm not worried about the social distancing.
Sure. Annette, I imagine that's a little bit, I don't know what your space is, but not 3,000 square feet, could I venture?
No, we're working off about half that size.
Mm-hmm. And same question for you. Is it hard to hold back?
Yeah, it is. You know, I feel like I'm a go-getter, and I'd really like to open the doors and have it, you know, full of folks like we've seen in the past, and it's just really hard and you know, staying in contact with the staff that now is at home and isn't there. You know, I know that they feel bad because my group is quite the team, and that's one thing that I have noticed is the team that is still left there, five of them and then myself. They sure have bonded and go above and beyond for each other on a daily basis. One other thing that I wanted to touch on as well is we saw as a challenge going through this, you know, every week I placed my orders and they'd come through great, and all of a sudden we're in this situation, and immediately some pricing started going up. So I know a lot of other places had it immediately closed and they had scaled back their days they delivered, and pricing started increasing. Then eventually some products started disappearing. You know, how the big joke around the media was toilet paper on shelves.
Right.
Well, for my business, yeast was the item of the toilet paper for us. And then it slowly started becoming some other items as well. And now it's packaging. So as the effects of other places far off that produce these products are not operating, it's now catching up with end users like myself. So it's making it difficult, and you have to be on your toes, and I'm reaching out to Amazon when I can and paying a higher price, or running to Super One. I mean, you just have to be able to, you know, juggle things and look for ways to find it differently or think of different packaging ideas. Hmm. I mean, it's just been such a challenge. Every time you think you have something accomplished, something else kind of creeps up that is, you know, soon to be a problem.
Right, right. Well, I think after this, though, and boy, are we looking forward to an after this, you should be well prepared for things that you thought were adversity in the past are nothing compared to this. We've been speaking with Annette Jacobson, owner of Twisted Pastries in Superior, and Amanda Korhonen, owner of the Pottery Burn Studio. Also with us is Andrew Donahue of the Small Business Development Center at the University of Wisconsin-Superior campus, although he's speaking with us from his home. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And stay safe, everybody. Coming up, monkey! The monkey with the tool belt goes Hollywood after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you visited the Duluth Children's Museum or perused the children's section of a bookstore or library, you've likely come across Chico Bon Bon, a.k.a. the monkey with the tool belt. He's the creation of Duluth author and artist Chris Monroe, who wrote the long-running comic strip in the Minneapolis Star Tribune and Duluth News Tribune, Violet Days. And if you haven't met him or been to any of those locations because of the COVID-19 shutdowns, not to fear. He's now appearing on your TV or computer as star of his own Netflix series. We spoke with Chris Monroe in our studios last September after she got word of her character's impending stardom. And before any of us had any notion of a lockdown that would make services like Netflix loom larger than ever. Here's our conversation back then, followed by an update, including exactly how you can watch The Local Monkey Made Good. So take us back to the first monkey with the tool belt, and that monkey, of course, I know is Chico Bon Bon.
Yes.
Where did this come from?
At the time that I was encouraged to do a children's book, I had illustrated one before, and the publisher, Lerner Publishing, the publisher himself, Adam, had been reading my comic and had offered me the option of writing a book sometime and submitting it to him. At the time, I worked part-time at Marshall Hardware in Duluth. So
you knew something about tool belts.
I did. I did know a few things about tools. And I was also the toy buyer there. So I, the only tool-related
for those who haven't been there, Marshall Hardware is kind of like a general store.
It is.
And so when you say a toy buyer, it's something that that hardware store would have.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of anything they don't have.
Right. They have everything, right, for sure. And they had a great toy department. And but the only toy that was tool-related beyond, you know, some like little Stanley tools or whatever was Bob the Builder. And I was just not a huge fan of Bob the Builder. He was just boring to me, and I thought it would be great to have a better character.
Well, what's wrong with Bob the Builder? By the way, Bob, if you're listening, we could give you equal time.
Well, you know, he was just kind of like a boring, average guy, and I thought a monkey with a tool belt, now that's got legs. So that was the inspiration.
Four hands.
Yeah, and opposable thumb.
Right.
Yeah. And a tool belt. So, you know, the minute I came up with the idea, I just thought, this idea is so good. I love it. Just the words, monkey with a tool belt, just like, this is it. It's going to work.
And you said that you were encouraged to do a children's book by someone who was a fan of Violet Days. But Violet Days was not a children's strip.
No, not really. It was it was an adult strip, not a little...
A more mature strip, right.
Yes.
That's where we struggled to save ourselves here, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was offbeat, and it had a sense of humor that required some degree of sophistication.
I like to think so, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. On purpose or not?
I think occasionally there were ones maybe that kids would like, but... Yeah, in general, they were a little more, I don't know, esoteric or something.
So what was it that led to the suggestion that that would be good children's book fodder?
Well, I had done some comics about the Girl Scout cabin, and one of the editors that I had worked with, Jill Braithwaite at Lerner, she really thought that the Girl Scout comics would lend themselves to a children's book. And then I think she brought it up to Adam, and then he was kind of just reading some of the squirrel strips and things like that, I think, and just thought, well, you know, she has a voice. Maybe she could lend it to this
Violet
type
Day's
of writing.
Squirrel. You had a squirrel character.
Yeah, right. There was... I
a talking
kind of,
squirrel, of course.
Well, there was just a lot of comic strips about various things about squirrels.
Right.
I mean, some of the squirrels in Minneapolis were... almost melding into rat-like territory, too. They had, like, their tails were straightening out, and they weren't fluffy and cute. I don't know what was going on.
Well, I can see how you could gravitate toward a monkey after that. So,
yeah.
So this is really a case of writing about what you knew, right? You worked in a hardware store. You did do children's illustrations, and you put some thought into this. How did you developed a character, or give us an idea of Chico Bon Bon's personality. Where'd you get the name, by the way?
Well, the name, you know, I was just kind of brainstorming names. That was actually the first name because I am a big Marx Brothers fan, and I thought Chico after Chico Marx, which I found out later, it's really Chico Marx.
That's right.
So it was kind of an homage to him, and then I just thought Chico Bon Bon, that sounded just so great. It just kind of kept running through my head, and then I did write a list of maybe 60 other possible names and went back to that very first one.
And he's a curious fellow. He's kind of like Curious George, perhaps, if I may make
Curious George is more of a maker of mayhem, I think, than Chico Bon Bon. Chico is very capable, and he's unflappable. He never panics. He doesn't freak out ever. He's very calm.
If he's stuck in a box or something.
Yeah,
like
he's always got a plan. He's always got the right tool. And so, and then I also try to purposely make him look happy to be doing his tasks instead of like, you know, stern or worried or like, boy, I don't know. He's always just like, yep, I've got this.
We're talking to Chris Monroe, the author of Monkey with a Tool Belt, which is soon to be an animated series on Netflix. So take us beyond the Monkey with a Tool Belt. Well, that was the first book.
The first book, it just did really well. It sold a lot of copies and it won a lot of awards. I think it won 16 national awards. So they asked me to do another one, and then the series was born.
Mm-hmm. And then you had some sneaky sheep appearing in there for a while.
Yes. I had sneaky sheep, and then I had Cookie the Walker and The Bug on a Bike. Those were my other three books that I wrote and illustrated.
So what's going to change with an animated series? Actually, I was looking it up on that good old thing YouTube, wondering if there were any sneak previews or something, because this is radio, and I thought people might want to hear what Chico Bon Bon sounds like, or should we call him Chico Bon Bon?
No, he's definitely
he's Chico.
Chico.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does he get a voice in the series?
He does. He has a voice. I wanted Keanu Reeves. This was before Toy Story 4. But Keanu, I think, would have just taken too much of the spotlight and probably the money, too. I don't know. But he's not. It's not the because I thought he has a mellow voice. I wanted. But Chico has a very cute voice. I've seen and heard a few clips of what they're working on. It's all top secret, but it's funny. It's cool.
When will we know? When will it not be top secret?
Well, I don't know when they'll leak any advanced stuff. I think there is one piece of animation that they put out, but he doesn't speak in it.
That's what I saw, which, again, I was looking
rocket.
For something for the radio, so...
Yeah, I'm not sure. All I heard was spring 2020, because they have to have them all ready at the same time. And then now it's been picked up in China, too, so, you know, it's just a new chapter for Chico. He's got friends... He's got a van. He's going out into the world, and it's pretty exciting.
Well, what are his frustrations? I'm wondering. You say that his character is a can-do character. He never gets frustrated, but
no.
He has challenges he faces. And I take it this is meant to encourage children. I've actually read the book to children at some of the local schools, very well received. But what sort of challenges do you give him?
Well, his challenges are typically, you know, fix-it related. But, you know, there's usually, I mean, especially like in the Maniac Muffins. The muffins were wrecking the town. There was he had to get on it right away.
How do muffins wreck a town?
Oh, they were just smashing into everything and, you know, just, you know, destroying things. And part of it is his buddy Clark, the elephant, made the muffins. So I think dealing with Clark is probably his biggest challenge. But you wouldn't know it. He's always very cheerful.
How many books are there now?
There are 5 Monkey with a Tool Belt books and 1 coming.
I grew up on the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons, and they were noted for reaching people on many different levels. They were written partially for adults to get some perhaps political humor. Some of the people writing them were actually blacklisted Hollywood writers. And then they were written on a, you could say, more basic but simpler level for children so that both could understand it. Are you doing that to some degree?
Well, in my books, I think I do. I mean, there's some like hidden references, like in the first book, two of the tools, there's a lifter and a puller, and lifter puller is a really great band. So that there's little
well, that one got by me.
Yeah, there's little Easter eggs for sure in the books, and I don't know that much about the series because I only wrote one of the episodes. But I have seen what they've shared with me, and just there's multi levels. Yeah. The music choices were just like hilarious. So I was really impressed. The writing was way more exciting and fun than I expected.
So
actually,
you wrote one, but then they put a whole team of writers on it, it sounds like.
Yeah, yes.
After they got your flavor.
Right. They're just sort of based on the kind of quirkiness of the original series, but there's a lot of changes. And
were you able to approve all those, or
no,
did you sign
not,
that
no,
away?
Not really, but they were. I did get some input, even though legally I didn't really have any input into it. But
the cost of success.
Yeah, but they've done a really great job. It's pretty cool.
As long as it isn't the Disney version of Winnie the Pooh.
It's not.
I mean, Pooh just was not the same, and Eeyore was completely off. First of all, he's cheerful,
yeah,
or something like that. So Disney later rectified that by reintroducing what they called classic Pooh.
Classic Pooh,
right?
Yeah.
But we won't have to worry about a classic Chico Bon Bon, right?
No, it's fun.
So how did this happen? Did you go out and say, okay, Netflix, I want you to buy my book, or did somebody call you up one day or somewhere in between?
It's a little, the company, Silvergate Media, that developed the series and then sold it to Netflix, they sought out the title. Someone there, you know, liked the book and thought it had potential to be an animated series. And he then approached us and they optioned it. So it had been optioned for a few years before they found an outlet for it.
Mm-hmm.
So then they signed with Netflix. And so it's going forward now in 1,000% faster than it was when it was just an optioned thing.
Sure. And your response when all this happened?
I was excited. You know, I was thought Netflix is a great place for it to be. It's like
it's totally, you know, the future of TV.
Yeah, yeah. As opposed to something like Disney Junior, where you have to have an expensive cable hookup. You know, so I was really excited about Netflix.
One last note. What's been the most rewarding response you ever got from a child from your books?
Oh, gosh, there's been so many. I mean, kids really seem to connect to Chico. And sometimes the kids will come in costume, dressed. At one of the Kevin Kling book signings, a little girl, like, interrupted us and said, I'm wearing Chico Bon Bon socks. And it was so cute. And I was like, it's a big honor to be on someone's socks.
Absolutely. We've been talking to Chris Monroe, author of The Monkey with the Tool Belt, children's book series, and many other fine works. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Robin.
That was our conversation with Chris Monroe, the author of The Monkey with the Tool Belt children's book series, back in September. Those were the good old days when we actually had guests in our studios. She now joins us by phone from her Duluth home for an update since the Netflix series launched. Welcome to Simply Superior, Chris.
Thank you for having me, Robin. It's my pleasure.
And for anyone who doesn't know how it works, how does Netflix work?
You mean how do people watch it?
Yeah. You know, it's now one of the networks. It's the big time. You've made it. Congratulations. But you order it, or is it automatically on your cable, or how does it work?
You still have to order it. You still have to pay a monthly fee. So you have to sign up for it. And I think the majority of people have smart TVs now. So it's basically ready to go on your TV. You log in and boom, million shows at your fingertips.
I think you just called me a dinosaur because I do not have a smart TV. So.
Oh, well, you...
Well, maybe I do, actually. I'm not even sure, right, yeah.
My TV was a dumb TV, and I had... Then I had an Apple TV that I hooked up to it, and that was how I was able to watch Netflix on my dumb TV. So there's ways around it. Otherwise, you know, people stream and watch on their monitors, too, so...
On your computer.
On your computer, yes.
Right. So I just go to Netflix.com, I assume, And
yep.
Sign up and scroll through and find Monkey with the Tool Belt.
Yeah, it'll pop right up. He's got his own little avatar now, too, that you could click on him, and it'll bring you right to his shows.
So you were sworn to silence last fall before the series came out about the audio aspect, and we will take a listen to some of that.
I'm Chico Bonbon, Monkey with a Tool Belt.
And we're the
Fix-It Force!
Rainbow Thunder!
And back last fall, you were hoping to get Keanu Reeves at one point. So who can you tell us now who the voice of Chico Bonbon is?
It's Robbie Damon. He is the voice of Chico Bonbon, and he does a great job.
Let's see if we can find out what else he was in. You know, these are these Hollywood questions you didn't have to worry about when it was just a book.
I know.
Yeah, I've called him up on my phone, and I see an American voice actor, mostly known for providing voices for animations.
Yeah, it looks like he's Spider-Man. Looks like he's Peter Parker in some things. I did actually chat with them on a giant Zoom chat the day that they released the show, and so we did have some fun conversations, but they were in and amongst about 80 people, so.
I was going to say, now that we are all familiar with Zoom chats, no, you don't know everybody who's in that room.
No, and it was 3 pages of Zoom chat, so it was like, I was scrolling around, and then they were just production company, and people, the animators are all in Ireland, so there was a lot of really cool Irish people in there, and then the showrunners, who I have met, and there was a lot of toasts. People were toasting and drinking from little banana flasks. I had a banana daiquiri that I made. So there was a lot of day drinking going on and celebrating.
Right.
Great.
Well, you had those 80 squares. Was Chico in any of them?
You know, there was a guy dressed like Chico Bonbon. And then there was one of the PR women was sitting in a room that had some really cool Chico Bonbon kind of things behind her.
And so how does it all match with your writer's imagination in terms of his voice? And
you know, it's a lot different from the book, but I'm okay with that. It's, you know, like I said before, it's a new chapter for Chico. There's a lot of things about it that, you know, I really didn't have creative control over. So I'm just very pleased with the final result. If I had wanted to do things my way, you know, of course Keanu Reeves would be on board, but such is not the case.
He still could take over halfway through or something, right?
Right, yeah. Like Chico, you know, get maybe an anvil dropped on his head and his voice changes. A lot of, you know, pop culture references there to, you know, the Looney Tunes, but yeah, it's really cute. The writing is fun. You know, it's really funny. There's a lot of, you know, cultural references that I think is kind of a carryover from things in the book that are little asides.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that they've kind of captured the spirit of the book, even though it is quite different. He's got new friends and a new, more modern treehouse. And it's just a little more high energy than the books. The books are a little more chill, I would say.
Okay. Well, what I think you're telling us, and what anyone who's the least bit familiar with Hollywood learns very quickly, is that these people know what they're doing.
They do, and they've created a world that kids can really enjoy, and kids are going to love the energy in the new show.
Great. Any other updates or reactions?
You know, it's on the internet, one review, and they liked the show. They gave it a positive review, but they liked the books better. So, you know.
Gee, the author is so torn about that one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that one, I am torn. And but ultimately, you know, if there's diehard fans of the books and they exist and out in the world, that maybe they might not be totally excited about the changes, because that's what happens when things get adapted to the screen, you know. But eventually that tide is going to turn, and people are going to be watching this show for years, and then they're going to pick up the books and go, what are these? These are weird. This isn't Chico Bonbon. So right now the old school Chico Bonbon is still, you know, still holding his own.
All right. Well,
and we do have a new book coming out in August with old school Chico. So,
and the title is
Monkey with a Tool Belt Blasts Off.
Is he going in outer space?
He is. He's going to outer space, and it's a funny one. It's got a lot of slapstick and a lot of sly references to nerdy sci-fi TV shows and movies and things like that.
Great. We've been speaking with Chris Monroe, author of the Monkey with a Tool Belt series, book series, and now a series on Netflix. Thank you for joining us, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, earlier in the show, we talked about the challenges two businesses are facing with staying open and reopening during the pandemic. What are some of the differences statewide in Wisconsin now that the state Supreme Court has indeed overturned Governor Evers' safer-at-home order and pretty much left everything up to the local governments, right?
Yeah, it's been a patchwork of local regulations or, you know, approaches to how to handle this. Up here in northern Wisconsin, we've seen a number of northern counties like Douglas, Burnett, Ashland, and Bayfield. They've all said they don't have any plans to issue stay-at-home orders right now, but they're asking businesses and people to take precautions like we've been doing. That includes like social distancing, using PPE or personal protective equipment, wearing masks, minimizing contact. And they basically, their guidance to businesses has been to follow the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation's guidelines. Although I think I saw in Douglas County's advisory from the health department that they're saying to people, you know, you can limit gatherings to fewer than 20 people. So they're taking some precautions up here, but not any stay-at-home orders locally, like we've seen in the southern areas of the state. In Milwaukee, for instance, their stay-at-home order is still in place. Although in the county, they're starting to see easing of restrictions. And I believe Dane County, you know, where Madison is, they still have a stay-at-home order in place as well, where they have it reopening based on reaching certain metrics, much like the Badger bounce back plan that Governor Tony Evers had in place prior to the Supreme Court ruling.
You know, ignorance of the law is no excuse, but how in the world do you know? I mean, I suppose you know what town you're in, but, you know, would you ever have a city like Superior having something different than the county like Douglas?
I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, we've seen that in Milwaukee, for instance, where they have an order in place for the city, but not for the surrounding county, where those restrictions are being eased. So it would make it a lot more difficult for people to stay on top of what they're being asked to do in certain areas. And, for example, in the Bayfield and Ashland area, they've issued some travel safer advisories now with the Memorial Day weekend coming up. You know, they're asking people to check in with the local rules before they visit, you know, and to respect any safety measures that businesses have in place and track where they're going in case there happens to be an outbreak in the area.
Okay. Well, on the Duluth side of the Bay, tourism is, of course, a big deal. One of the hot tourist spots is always Spirit Mountain, but maybe not this year. Brooks?
No, they announced this week that Spirit Mountain will not open for summer activities, which includes mountain biking and the cancellation of many weddings and banquets, too. Essentially, the mountain closed in March amid the COVID-19 pandemic and ended the ski season early. They were hoping to get back up and running for the summer season, which they thought maybe July 1st would be a good target, but essentially they need more money from the city to do so, and the city of Duluth right now is facing a really big budget challenge. And the tourism taxes that typically go subsidize Spirit Mountain are also in danger of coming up short this year.
And then, you know, it's kind of crazy hearing phrases like the mountain closed and the town is closed, the country is closed. But we have a major company closing. So I'm fortunately more used to that phrase, but it doesn't make it any easier. Tell us about that one.
Right, that AAR would be closing its airline maintenance facility up in Duluth. They've been located there since about 2012 and took over the former Northwest Airlines facility. So what AAR does is they perform routine maintenance on commercial airliners, most recently United, and they had just signed a 20-year lease last year, which they will be walking away from, costing hundreds of jobs.
Well, Danny, back on the Wisconsin side, the Supreme Court's ruling evokes an earlier ruling they made limiting mail-in ballots in the election, which pretty much forced voters to go to the polls on Election Day last month and risk exposure to the virus. So what's the latest on absentee ballots?
Yeah, so the Wisconsin Elections Commission met on Wednesday night to discuss this, and part of the reason why they were discussing it is because a lawsuit had been filed by minorities and people with disabilities saying that there needs to be more protection this fall and that mail-in ballots should be given to every registered voter in the state. And so they were discussing that Wednesday at the meeting, but they really didn't reach a decision. It seemed like Republicans were open to mailing out applications for ballots, but the hang-up being that they didn't want to mail them to people who had already registered for a mail-in ballot before, and also they didn't want to mail them to a number of people who have since moved out of the state. And so that would make the plan less costly. It's about $2 million, I believe, what the Democrats are suggesting as far as mailing out these applications to get people registered for the fall. And as you know, there were about 1 million people that voted absentee in the April primary. So they want to address what happened then and see if they can do it safer. And, you know, Republicans and Democrats both came under criticism for the way that that election was handled.
Well, this time they have a little bit of time to figure it out. So let's hope they do. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you.
Danielle Kading is a Superior-based reporter for WPR News. We also have been joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/North Report. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with, why not, a little more monkey business from Peter Gabriel. Stay safe, everyone.